Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast, and today we have our first repeat guest. He was also the first guest on the podcast, and he was so nice we had to have him on twice. It's Ian Gunn, and I'm glad to have you here to talk with us today, Ian.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
So just a little background again on Ian. He's a New Orleans attorney and a 2014 graduate of Tulane Law School. He's a staff writer for the website The Sports Esquires, which is always a great place to turn for sports law news and documents. And he's been providing excellent legal analysis of Deflategate, as well as weekly updates on kind of the latest sports law issues as they arise. How are you doing today, Ian?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on again, Peter. How's everything going?
Doing great. It's a beautiful day here in South Florida. This is actually the second podcast I'm recording today, so we're on a roll right now.
Great.
Okay, well, why don't we jump in? Last time we talked about Deflategate just after Judge Berman's ruling in favor of Tom Brady's legal team, where they vacated the four-game suspension by Commissioner Goodell. A lot's happened since then, so can you provide us with a bit of an update?
Sure. I think the big thing to note that, you know, was noted at the time, but in hindsight with the appeals court ruling and the latest developments in the case bears repeating, but after the NFL took its lumps before Judge Berman, they went out and they hired Paul Clement, all-star appellate attorney, to handle their appeal to the Second Circuit, which, you know, in hindsight looks like a fantastic move. Of course, everyone said it was a good move at the time as well. You know, Paul Clement has argued more cases before the Supreme Court than anyone in the last 15 years, I think. So it's kind of hard to go wrong with that kind of experienced litigator, and is well known for his track record of success. And so the NFL appeals to the Second Circuit, and we get this back and forth between Clement and Jeff Kessler, who was previously representing Players Association and Brady. And they go through oral arguments, and oral arguments, everyone was kind of saying, well, it doesn't look like it's going well for Brady. And looked like it was going to be a 2-1 decision based upon how the judges were leaning. And that's how it came down in a, I would say, lightning fast decision for an appeal case. 1.5 months, really, is how quickly. I think the oral arguments were on March 3rd, and the Second Circuit released its decision about a week ago, which is extremely fast for an appellate decision. So it was a 2-1 decision in favor of the NFL, and they reversed Judge Berman. And I think you could say, as strong as Judge Berman's opinion was for the NFLPA and Tom Brady, that's how strong the appellate court majority decision was for the NFL. Of course, it was a 2-1 decision, so Brady did get a dissent from Chief Judge Katzmann. But, you know, now this is a huge loss for him and a huge win for the NFL.
Right. And I remember talking last time, we you know, a lot of the issues that Judge Berman had with the ruling were kind of fundamental fairness issues. There were procedural things, the NFL's use of reports and things like that, that they found some problems with that. And so, was this kind of overturned on similar rulings on kind of these procedural legalistic kind of issues?
It was kind of the exact opposite. Judge Berman looked at the CBA and looked at the situation and said, you know, Roger Goodell is not really following kind of the implicit understanding of the parties and the implicit rules of the CBA. He's ignoring the law of the shop. He's ignoring this idea about notice. And the Second Circuit took a different approach. And this is perhaps a lesson for the NFLPA to remember in contract negotiations. But the Second Circuit looked at their arguments and said, there are a lot of very nuanced procedural arguments here. And I think that meant two things to them. One, to their mind, they looked at it as not having any prior experience with the collective bargaining agreement or with the NFL and the Players Association. They looked at it and says, these kinds of nuanced procedural arguments are something that an arbitrator should really consider. We shouldn't really be encroaching on the interpretation of these procedure issues. That's something for the arbitrator to do. And so the fact that you're even making these arguments almost seems like the district judge has already encroached on Roger Goodell's authority. And I think that the second point is kind of because there were these, you know, nuanced procedural arguments, because these judges are just getting this case, it's not like it's Judge Doty in Minnesota who has handled a number of NFL, NFLPA disputes before. You know, this is the first time time they've seen this case and seen these parties before them. So they don't have that background of how did this develop? What's the law of the shop? What's the CBA? And I think they kind of just looked at it as, you know, very confusing and a little overly complex. Not to say that if they had taken the time to look into it, they wouldn't have understood it perfectly, because they're, you know, obviously appellate judges, very smart, very well trained. But I think they just kind of looked at it as like, you know, I don't really care about that. It's a little too nuanced for me. Let's not decide the case based on those issues. And that's a big problem for the NFLPA going forward, because, you know, certainly a lot of their arguments in commissioner discipline cases rely on these nuanced procedural arguments. And I think a big lesson for them going forward is that if you don't have it laid out explicitly in the collective bargaining agreement what the procedural protections are, you can't count on federal judges to necessarily enforce this sort of understood, you know, notice requirement that they want federal judges to enforce, because it's not explicitly in the CBA.
I think this is an interesting aspect of kind of American law. I was speaking with a friend the other day who's clerking for a district court judge, and he was saying, you know, his job's quite different from mine in that I go to work and I work on the same things every day, and I'm literally doing the same thing over and over again, and then hopefully getting better at it. And he's clerking, which is a completely different issue every single day, you know, multiple times a day. They're hearing all these different things. Sometimes it's, you know, a contracts case, and sometimes it's a criminal case, and sometimes it's, you know, antitrust or whatever. And every single time he has to do all this new research and learn about a completely new issue. And that's how we've set up, you know, judges to deal with all these different things, and that has a lot of benefits, but like you're saying, it can, some of these cases are quite complicated and can be tough even for a very, you know, distinguished judge to deal with. And that's one of the reasons why we favor arbitration. The idea is that these arbitrators are specialists, and they see these cases over and over again. They can deal with them. And, you know, it's perhaps a little different in the case of a commissioner, but it seems like that's where this appellate court is putting value in, you know, let's leave it to the arbitrators to deal with the cases that arbitrators are familiar with, and not get into the weeds in these complicated issues. Right. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think that's spot on. That's kind of precisely how they saw the case. Just this idea that getting into the weeds of this case, this is going to our area. Roger Goodell is the agreed upon arbitrator between these parties. He has this broad deference, just like all the other arbitrators do. And that's the sort of thing that we should not encroach upon. I think there are a couple things in the opinion, if you read it, that you can kind of tell that they're unfamiliar with these sorts of issues. And especially when you look at a 1.5 month turnaround time for an opinion, that's the kind of thing, I guess, that is to be expected. And certainly that's directly impacting why they're deciding the way they are. They're saying, why are we as federal judges going to be deciding these nuanced procedural issues of this agreement negotiated between the parties when they've agreed upon an arbitrator to decide these issues for them? And under the law, arbitrators have broad deference. And of course, we heard that from the NFL throughout the case, and that's exactly how the Second Circuit saw the case.
Okay. So like you said, they overruled Judge Berman's ruling, which had vacated the 4-game suspension that Commissioner Goodell placed on Tom Brady. And so is the case over now? Is that the end of everything?
Well, it's not quite over. I do think, real quick before we move on, the interesting thing to note is that instead of, you know, if you were go back and you look at Berman's decision, he decided a few of the issues, but had chosen not to decide a few others, because he said, once I've decided these issues, I don't need to decide these others in order to rule that Brady's suspension should be vacated. And so the question was, when it went up on appeal to the Second Circuit, was if they decided to reverse Judge Berman on the issues that he decided, would they send it back to him and have him decide the issues he refused to decide at first, or would they decide those issues themselves? And one thing that we saw was they decided those issues themselves. And the big issue that they decided they decided it, but it was basically a paragraph where they just kind of dismiss it out of hand, is this idea of evident partiality. Is Roger Goodell a biased arbitrator? Which is a huge issue of concern for the Players Association. And the Second Circuit just said, no, he's not. You agreed to this. He's not. Which has been the NFL's position all along. You bargained for him. He can't be biased. Or if he is biased, then you agreed to it. So that's a situation where, you know, once they do that, the case doesn't go back to Berman to decide that. Certainly that was a huge loss for the Players Association. But Brady does have a couple other options to keep pursuing this case. And based upon the most recent developments, it looks like he is going to pursue those options. The first option is he can go with a request to have the entire Second Circuit rehear the case, what we call a rehearing en banc. To that end, he's actually hired Ted Olson, who is a former solicitor general. You know, he's won like 75% of his cases before the Supreme Court, is just as brilliant as Paul Clement. In fact, both of them, both Clement and Olson, were both solicitor generals under George W. Bush. So two excellent litigators here. I think some people are questioning why the Players Association didn't bring Olson in on the appeal to counter Clement, as opposed to just leaving Kessler in charge. But Brady can go after the rehearing, and it looks like he will. And Brady can also then, if he loses, the rehearing is denied, or if he goes through the rehearing and loses the rehearing, then he can also appeal to the Supreme Court and ask them to review the case, which, of course, is very low chance of success on that, because the Supreme Court reviews about 1% of cases.
Yeah, no, and I mean, who knows with sports, because it seems like people do all kinds of crazy things when it comes to sports. But yeah, no, I mean, it would seem in a Supreme Court that only handles, you know, 60 or 70 cases a year, it would be a small chance that they'd take this one affecting basically one person.
Right. And of course, you know, there are counterexamples. You know, we could say, well, Muhammad Ali's case that went up to the Supreme Court, it was kind of a right of publicity dispute with him, but intellectual property case. That case went up to the Supreme Court, and you could say, well, there wasn't a circuit split for that, or there wasn't a big issue, and the Supreme Court kind of just looked at it and was like, we want to hear a case about Muhammad Ali. You know, they were kind of, I guess, starstruck. So, you know, that could be what happens here, and certainly bringing Ted Olson on helps with, you know, your petition for cert. And I think the Players Association is also hoping that perhaps Adrian Peterson's case in the Eighth Circuit will come down with a favorable ruling, and then they will try to portray that as a circuit split between the Eighth Circuit and the Second Circuit on the commissioner's interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement. I think those are two different issues. I think the Peterson case is not really about commissioner power, but about the ex post facto nature of his punishment. But, you know, certain Players Association is going to try to paint it as a circuit split to try to increase their chances with the Supreme Court. But Brady's best chance is probably either attempting to settle with the league or rehearing.
Yeah, and it seems like one thing this ruling has brought out is the importance of collective bargaining, and that it is tough to argue that the commissioner is a biased arbitrator when you agreed to have him arbitrate. And that's a tough position to take, in that, you know, you agreed to something, and I just think, you know, it's going to be a couple of years before we have the next CBA negotiations in the NFL, but I can't imagine they will be not contentious.
Right.
And based on all
this. I saw the last time. The ironic thing, of course, now we have this matchup between Olson and Clement on the Deflategate appeal, but they were also matched up in the 2011 lockout, suing on behalf of the league and the players. And of course, Clement was on the winning side with the owners that time in the Eighth Circuit, and Olson was for the players and was on the losing side. So it's a little bit of a rematch from that, but you're right. You know, the big problem the Players Association faces now is that the NFL can say, look, we've got the Second Circuit on our side. Goodell has all this authority, and we're not going to give it up without you giving up something in return. And I think, you know, a lot of people have been talking about, well, why wouldn't the owners want to remove this power from Goodell anyway? Because it's a PR disaster. It seems like every case we get now, Goodell botches something, whether it's Ray Rice or Greg Hardy or Adrian Peterson or Tom Brady. And it just turns into this legal nightmare for the league, where even if they win the case like they did now, it's a year and a half, 2 year dispute that is, you know, not good publicity for the league. But the thing is that these owners, they're savvy businessmen. That's for the most part, unless they inherited it, that's how they got their money, is by being smart businessmen and smart at the negotiating table. And so they look at it and say, well, we've got the court in our pocket deciding this is how it is. So if you want this, you've got to give up something in return. And that's going to put the Players Association in a real tough spot. And of course, the Players Association is going to dig in, because they're going to say, well, hold up a minute. You might have won the Second Circuit, but we won at the district court level for Brady, you know, potentially maybe even winning at the appellate court level for Peterson if that comes down their way, but have won arbitrators in the Greg Hardy and the Ray Rice, and even going back to Bountygate, Paul Tagliabue. So the Players Association is going to say, well, we've won all these cases too. So, you know, obviously there's no love lost between these two sides, but there's even less love between them now and going forward. And it's going to be a very contentious decision-making process. And if you think back to the 2011 lockout and that dispute, commissioner discipline was an issue there too, because Paul Tagliabue tended to have this policy of, we'll wait and see how the legal process plays out before we punish these players. And Roger Goodell took this new stance when he came in. Well, I'm going to punish independent of the legal system based upon what I think is good for the image of the game, which is, you know, part, someone say, part of the reason why he gets into trouble with these punishments. So he started doing that, kind of changed the policy that the league was taking towards player discipline. And so the Players Association said, wait a minute, this is going to be a big issue for us in the collective bargaining sessions. And of course, you know, we saw that in reality, they didn't accomplish anything in limiting commissioner power, and it's pretty much as limitless as it was before. And they all agreed to this because they wanted other concessions and other things were a bigger priority. So it'll be interesting to watch for sure.
Well, great. Yeah, I think this continues to be interesting. You know, people complain, oh, we've had so much Deflategate, but certainly legally it's interesting, and just from a drama standpoint, there's a lot going on. So I think this has brought out a lot of interesting issues, and it seems like it'll keep on doing so. So
right.
Is there anything else that you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, I think you touched on an interesting point just about the people being weary of Deflategate, and it's gone on and on, and Tom Brady and the Patriots and all this stuff. But I think when we're in talking about sports law and we're talking about these two parties, the Players Association and the league, it's important to remember that this case is not really about Tom Brady and the Patriots anymore. Certainly Brady's suspension rides on this, and the Patriots' potential, you know, Super Bowl campaign next year rides on this. But right now this is about player rights. And we've seen this pivot from Ted Olson in his request for an extension of time for rehearing. But he said, you know, this decision will affect all player rights. And certainly the NFL's position is this decision affects the commissioner's discipline and his power in all future player discipline cases. So while a lot of people are saying, well, Tom Brady, the Patriots, we're tired of hearing about this. Some people think they're cheaters. Some people think they've been persecuted. But really, this is a very important case for the league. And anyone who's a NFL fan and worries, well, my player, you know, some ex-player on my team might get in trouble, this is a case to watch and pay attention to. Even if you're a little bit tired of it, it's still very important for the NFL.
Okay. Well, we'll keep paying attention to it, and I'm sure you'll keep providing good analysis. So thanks for coming on today. I think it's been a great interview.
Great. Thanks for having me, Peter. Appreciate it.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIBMontoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott. And you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.